It is the Batter Up Podcast for the 17th day of September 2020, and it's hard to believe that we are on the verge of the last three series of the Major League Baseball regular season. Will Polajic, Joe Patrick, Caleb Johnson here with you. We say hello to our cohorts. Hello, Joseph.
Hey, Willie P. How's it going?
I'm well. Hello, Caleb Johnson.
What up, what up, what up?
All right. If we want to start anywhere, we can start with Cole Hamels last night. He obviously made his return to the rotation. The plan is to get him three starts before the end of the regular season. How encouraged, discouraged, or nonplussed were you two?
I guess nonplussed might be an appropriate response. I wasn't really expecting much out of him, at least in terms of the actual production part of it, in terms of the giving up runs or whatever. The main thing for me, obviously, with him coming off an injury, the multiple injuries that he's had over the last year, and having not pitched in a major league game since I think last September 28th, so almost a full year since he'd pitched in a major league game, I was just wanting to see him get through it relatively, you know, healthy, velocity where it needs to be, and just generally look okay, you know. And I still think that, you know, we're recording this the day after the game. I don't think we're through the woods yet with him in terms of how I feel about him, because these next couple days are going to be very important for how he recovers, and that's obviously going to be a big thing in making sure that he can go out there and get his next start. And then I think he's scheduled to go to pitch the last day of the season, so you don't want him to be bumped back at all so that he can make both of his starts. So I'm not like, obviously you would have liked to have seen him do better. And I actually thought it was really interesting talking to him after the game and hearing him really kind of get on himself for the runs that he gave up. He expected to do better. And he said that, you know, the media was trying to say, oh, but, you know, yeah, you're healthy. You know, must have felt good to get back out there, et cetera, et cetera. And he was like, yeah, no, but dang, like I didn't do what I needed to do to give this team a chance to win. And I like that mentality from him. I like him kind of coming out and really not giving himself any outs in terms of the performance. So I was generally pleased with what I saw. Don't know about you guys.
The bar is just so low with him. Like, it's just, honestly, it's one of those, and I knew this was coming with our conversations, you know, watching him last night. I hated knowing his pitch count. Like, I did not enjoy watching that game in the back of my head going, all right, if he throws four more pitches here, we're getting a little close. What's going to happen? Are we going to the fourth? Let's see, you know, okay, all right. And I was just one of those, like, good grief, man. Yeah. Yeah, and it's one of those, like, this must be what Washington fans with Steven Strasburg must have felt in the past, just watching him. And I'm watching this game just kind of holding my breath. Like, is this the inning that he falls apart? Or is he going to get through it okay? He gives up three runs. And you're like, all right, well, that wasn't great. Wasn't bad. It's one start. How much weight can I put into all of this? And then I go look at the schedule. And I'm like, there's three series left in the season. And these are the conversations that we're having. And I get back to this idea of, I mean, the Braves have been telling us that the playoffs are going to be a crapshoot, and like we're in it, we're truly in the, like, who knows what's gonna happen.
Well, I'll say this.
Oscar Yanoa, come on down.
Yeah, exactly.
here's the part of it that's so singularly frustrating for me, and I'll kind of dovetail this into our next point, but the fact that you now have the offense at the ability where it is now, to where you have guys who are basically all healthy, like the entire lineup is healthy right now. You have Ozzie Albies back. You have as long of a lineup as you've had throughout the course of the regular season. Of course, you throw in the fact that Ronald Acuña is like one for the month right now, or at least one for his last 21. That's not very good. But even so, you expect him to bounce back, and the thing that I keep going back to, and we talked about this last time, is that, you know, what kinds of games are we going to see in the playoffs? And I even asked this when I had Kelly Kroll of Fox Sports on Saturday on my radio show, and I said, you know, are we going to see these kind of peculiar games, or are we going to see pitching like we've seen and we've come to be used to during the postseason? I think it's enough to get the Braves through the wild card round, just based on the fact that it's a 2 out of 3 series and you're going to have home field advantage. Again, no fans, but you still have the home environment, and I think that that helps you as a team. But from the standpoint of where the Braves are in terms of trying to make sure that you get through a bubbled LDS and an LCS unscathed and no days off, I think that that particular albatross is impossible for the Braves given their pitching situation, unless you play games like we've seen over the last month and a half.
Look, I hate the fact that Ronnie is on a slump right now, because it's one of those, isn't this just textbook Braves getting towards the end of the season? And, you know, we have those hot months usually right in the middle of the summer, and then get towards the end of the year, and, you know, Freddie will come to a screeching halt, or it's Ronald, right, or whatever. And right now it seems to be Acuna is the one who's just really struggling. And I get really concerned when he's going to get hot, you know, trying to figure that out. But as far as getting back to the rotation and any sort of playoff hopes, as currently they stand, the Braves would face the Reds in that quote-unquote wild card, which when I don't think we've put enough attention into this playoff format,
yeah, right,
and how awful, absolutely awful it is.
But the owners want it to go beyond this year, which is so stupid.
If I'm a player, absolutely shutting this down. I mean, there is, and we kind of talked about before, and I know we want to talk about it on this podcast at some point or whatever, this idea of being a top seed not really meaning a whole lot. You know, I mean, but it's truly everyone's playing in that first weekend in a 3-game series, and you could be the Dodgers playing the Giants, and the Giants get hot for whatever reason, and your season is over in the quote unquote wild card round, and you're a top seed. Like, that's just awful. But as far as the Braves though, getting through a first round series, I just get so worried. I mean, you know, one bad start from Max Fried, and this thing, and it's over.
Again,
that's it.
It's the crapshoot concept, which you're hoping works in the Braves' favor when you're talking about the Braves going against the top teams in the National League. But the crapshoot can also work against you in a short series like these wild card rounds, where they're going up a team against a team like a Cincinnati. You know, who knows what could happen? Trevor Bauer could throw the lights out one day, and then you're behind the eight ball, you know, with your non aces. So yeah, you never know. I want to go back to something that Will mentioned, talking about how long this lineup is now, and I want to kind of put it together with something that Alex Anthopoulos was talking about after the trade deadline. Obviously, at the trade deadline, all Braves fans, media, whoever, everybody was kind of expecting them to add a starting pitcher, obviously, with the woes that they were experiencing and are still experiencing. And Alex Anthopoulos kind of explained through the rationale of why the Braves ended up not making any deals. Part of that was the fact that it sounded like a team was going to, in a potential deal for a player, other teams were wanting a player that was currently a contributor at the major league level for the Braves, and that was one reason. But Alex Anthopoulos said that there was really only one impact pitcher that was dealt on the trade deadline, and that was Mike Clevinger. And I keep thinking, like, I was buying that for a while, and the more I've thought about it, it makes me think, like, you didn't really need to get a quote-unquote impact pitcher, however you would define that, for it to be an impact pitcher for this Braves team. Because with the offense that you have, you don't necessarily need a Mike Clevinger to give you a substantially better chance in some of these playoff series, especially when you're going to have a playoffs where you're going to have to use your entire starting staff like you normally would in a regular season, because you're not getting those days off like you normally would in a typical postseason. So I'm having more regrets about what the Braves decided to do or not to do at the deadline than I did at the deadline. At the deadline, I kind of was buying into what Alex Anthopoulos was saying, and maybe you guys were have been saying this for a while, and I was and I've just not been willing to listen. But I think
it's fine.
Here's a problem, Joe. Here's a problem, and I hate to interrupt you, but the fact that it's the 17th of September and we're still talking about what the Braves didn't do at the trade deadline. That's the reason why it sucked, okay? That's the reason why. The only fact that you got Tommy Malone and he's turned into 10-run Tommy, I mean, that's the part of the reason why people
elbow
look at this.
Man. He's got the elbow inflammation.
Oh, you know, he's got an inflamed ERA is what he is. He was sent to the alternate site with an inflamed ERA. That was not an injury. That was an excuse.
That was good, Will.
He was sent.
That was nice.
Sent to the alternate site with an inflamed ERA. So that's why people are pissed that they didn't do anything at the deadline. And it's weird. Last year, they were talking about how much of an impressive deadline that Anthopoulos had in remaking the bullpen because you let go of some prospects, but also you recognize that there was a need. It's almost as if they've recognized that there's a need, but they are not willing to do anything about it.
And if the Braves actually do win their first wild card series, they're most likely going to face the Padres and probably have to face Mike Clevinger.
Right.
Which just like, wouldn't that be just like chef's kiss of if Mike Clevinger sends the Braves out of the playoffs? I mean, I, as an Atlanta fan and someone who has just experienced so much pain and just, you know, it's just, I'm used to it at this point. It's one of those, that's going to happen.
It seems like
it?
That, yeah, I was going to say, it seems like that is definitely what is going to happen.
And it goes back to, like, we were talking about the fact that, and Caleb mentioned the format. The fact that the owners like this so much basically means that they're going to spend as little as possible to go 82-80 in a regular season, or would be 31-29 in this abbreviated format, and that's the problem that I think baseball is having, is that the owners do not want to let money go. And I don't know if it's the fact that the contracts are getting more expensive and too expensive for these owners to really handle, but the economics of baseball is just killing this game. And I don't blame the players. I don't blame players at all. The market value is the market value, and these things go up and guys get more valuable. And, you know, whether or not a guy plays out his contract to what you think it is, it's all dependent on their stats. But at the same time, I look at everything in this game right now and I'm saying, man, how in the world are we at a place right now where the owners are trying every which way to squeeze, you know, a penny out of a dollar?
Yeah, and with regards to this expanded playoffs and the fact that the owners want to keep it, I guarantee you that if it were to stay in effect for a period of years or just for the foreseeable future, I mean, I'll guarantee you that the value of certain players will change, and because the way that teams build and construct their rosters will change, because you would no longer need, there would be no longer a reason to try to shoot for like winning 100 games in a year. Like, right. You would not need to dominate the regular season like that. You would just want to get yourself in with a roster that is optimized for succeeding in the postseason, very much similar to what we saw from the Washington Nationals last year, who really kind of, you know, were able to just barely get in. And then, but once they got in, they were really well set up to make a deep run. And we obviously saw them knock out teams like the Dodgers, who were the, you know, the juggernaut throughout the regular season and obviously the favorite going into the postseason because they were set up that way. And I think you'll see teams adjust if they don't do that. And I don't think that it's good for the game. Well, I don't think it's good for the game. I don't think it's good for the
fans.
Don't
waver. It's not good for the game.
I was just going to say, like, you know, it might be good for some people in the game, like, and players too. Like, you might have certain players that
benefit. Some players on the fringe, yes.
Yeah,
but
right,
it won't
exactly.
benefit
yeah.
the game overall.
So I just didn't want to paint with a broad brush saying that, you know, everybody would lose by this. But yeah, I mean, it's not something I want to see. I don't like it.
Here's the sad part. Major League Baseball went from having 10 teams in the playoffs to now half the league or over half the league will be in the playoffs. And the Angels still didn't make it. Like, you're one of the best, one of the greatest Major League Baseball players of this current generation that we're in right now has still only seen the playoffs, Mike Trout, one time. And even in a 16-team format, still can't find the playoffs. And, I mean, we're getting so many games now, which I wonder what that's going to do. Just, you know, I mean, the playoffs were this exciting time, and I know some, I had heard some complaints that it was like, well, you have this long season and then this short postseason that's, you know, gone in a flash kind of thing. And I was like, well, that, to me, that was part of the excitement.
Yeah, absolutely.
It is, yeah, I mean, you play this long year, but you don't need a long playoff to follow it as well. I mean, I don't know. I think NBA playoffs, where, you know, when I start really paying attention, like, I mean, I'm watching games, and I'm trying to keep up with series kind of thing, but I'm not paying attention truly to games until we're getting to those, you know, conference finals toward sort of matchups, when I'm watching every single game, and I just wonder what's going to get lost with this first wild card round of three games where you just had one before. And this just excess of games to watch.
I have, and I kind of want to stop down on that, because we went from baseball getting basically the least percentage of teams in its postseason among the major sports, to now, if this stays around, the most. Like, that's an incredible jump. And it, again, I'm going to sound like we're doing a college football debate here, but it devalues the regular season. It completely devalues. Like, yeah, why are we playing 162 games to eliminate 14 teams? Like, and if you want to shorten the regular season, great. I'm not one of these purists who is cast into stone. Every season has to be 162 games. But if you want more playoffs, you've got to take away from the regular season, because if you're going to play 162 games and then a 16-team playoff with this convoluted cockamamie format, I think it's ludicrous. I mean, if you want to play down, if you want to go back down to, you know, 140 or 144, it probably won't get that low. It'll probably be around close to 156. And you want to have that extra round, you know, go right ahead. But I just don't think that the solution is more playoffs. The fact that the one thing, and again, I'm going to sound like a sanctimonious baseball old-timer, but the thing that makes baseball great is that over the period of time, over a long season, you know who's good and you know who's not good. And when you have teams, like Joe is supposing is going to happen, who basically just tread water from April through to August and then make that last little run in September, That doesn't prove to me that you're good over a long stretch. That just proves to me that you built your roster to win in October and you were just content on being just okay for the majority of the regular season. That's not a champion in my mind.
And I think that is one of the reasons why owners kind of like the idea of it.
Of course.
So they can just kind of, yeah, they can kind of be cheap. They can, you know, not really need to have the team set in stone, you know, from the very beginning, and all that planning that goes into having building a team like that in the offseason. And then, yeah, you just make the deals if you can, or if you need to sell, you can just easily sell, because there will be plenty of buyers who want to be out there. And yeah, it all makes sense from an owner's perspective, but it doesn't suit the fans, you know, or anyone who really follows baseball closely. I think it would be kind of a slap in the face. So yeah, it is jarring. And that's one of the reasons that baseball postseason, in my mind, has always been one of my favorites. There are lots of different things. There are lots of things about baseball postseason that I like. Like the 4 o'clock first pitch. Like, I love that. Like the late afternoon first pitches is kind of like signifying of playoff baseball. But yeah, it's like the fact that it's so short in comparison to it's such a contrast in terms of the challenge that faces a team in the postseason versus what a team has to prove itself to be able to do in the regular season, which is to win over a long period of time. It would just be such a shame if they went to this long term, and I hope it doesn't happen.
And the quality of play goes up in the postseason.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it does.
It's a total change. You know, like, and Brian Snickers mentioned it. He actually mentioned it after a couple games ago, you know, where he was like, we kind of played this game like a postseason game. And he was talking about the way that he had to utilize his bullpen in a certain game. I forget which one it was, but it was one where, you know, they had to use the bullpen early because they got in trouble and things like that. And that's what's so great about how, you know, again, the contrast between what you see in the postseason and what you would normally see in the regular season. It's such a different challenge, and it makes it just so much more enjoyable for fans.
So going from kind of one aspect of the conversation we've been having to a completely different, is where my brain's been kind of going back and forth of, as far as last week, we did have the conversation of, we wondered where the Braves would be without really having their top starters and trying to just kind of piecemeal this all together in order to get to the point that we're at now with these final three series. 4-3, not too bad.
No.
I know the Orioles series.
Discouraging.
Just, yeah. And it's one of those, on the same token, the Braves, as much as they had a 14-1 loss, that wasn't realistic of their season. They also had a 29-9 win, which wasn't realistic of their season. So, I think those kind of things, they'll even each other out. The other thing is, you know, we keep jumping on the playoffs and just how awful this all seems to go. I would like to remind you guys that when we get into this playoff season, they're getting rid of the extra innings putting a runner on second base. Like a rule that we played the entire season. They're just like, nope, not a good idea.
Sounds like hockey. It sounds like hockey where you get rid of the shootout and in the postseason you need to play continuous overtime.
Okay.
It's basically like hockey.
But no, I could at least understand hockey because like they want the actual game going on. You know what I mean? It's essentially if Major League Baseball had gone to what I think would be more entertaining, which is you go into extra innings and you have a home run derby and then you find your winner that way. Well, if you went into the Major League Baseball postseason and you got rid of that and you just said, like, no, we're going to play regular extra inning games, well, that's the actual game itself. So I can make sense of that because in the regular season, you're just trying to end things. However, I still hate this putting a runner on second deal because it is unfairly giving offense to a team that could be struggling with offense all game, and then how you don't credit to pitchers and
of course
just all of this stuff. But just the fact that we played with the rule,
it's such a fundamental rule too. It's such a drastic thing that changes.
Yeah,
that can change the outcome of the game.
Well, I was surprised.
And it has.
I was surprised that they didn't do it the way the international, because this is basically based off of the international softball tiebreaker,
right?
Where they do the same thing, but the international softball tiebreaker, they give the team an out already.
Yeah.
So like I was wondering why that wasn't the case. Like if you're going to do it like that, because that kind of evens it out a little bit more. That makes it a little bit more fair for the team that is in the field for that situation. But
it seems to me like baseball
I still don't like it.
It seems to me like it was really just to try to get these games over with after an inning or two because you can so easily just kind of sacrifice and get the guy in. Yeah. Okay, I have a question for you guys. Again, going back to the playoffs, which is we're kind of going zigzagging around in this conversation, this topic.
This has been a very zigzag.
I want to drill back down on the Braves rotation. If you had a playoff game tomorrow, who would you rather start? Kyle Wright or Oscar Yanoa? And this is not a silly question because there's a good chance that this would be a dilemma that Brian Snicker has to face if they get through this wild card round.
I would start Kyle Wright. Because of the fact that I feel like Kyle Wright has a greater opportunity to help you go longer, is my opinion on that. And I also feel like in a playoff situation, given the fact it would depend on if it was a do or die situation. It would depend on if it was a decisive game. If it's an earlier game and you have other games to play, I would start Wright. If you were in a do-or-die situation and an all-hands-on-deck, then I wouldn't feel uncomfortable going with Yanoa. It would depend for me because of the fact you have no off days. You have the situation where if you go with a bullpen game, you are mortgaging your bullpen for the rest of the series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like almost when you go with Yanoa, it's kind of like throwing a bullpen game. Obviously, he's going to be able to throw more than like a quote unquote starter or an opener.
Regular reliever.
Yeah. But I gotta say, like to me, it's not even that close between the stuff that these guys are showing, and that Oscar Yanoa is way better in terms of how difficult it is for an opposing batter to face. The stuff
I'm
that he's
saying
throwing.
He's not good. Well, I just don't know.
I'm not coming at you. I'm not saying you're wrong, Will. I'm just saying that
I'm saying you're wrong.
It's actually, I'm just saying it's really a testament to Ynoa and how much he has improved since he came up and made his major league debut last year for a cup of coffee. I mean, he is really, it's amazing that he's coming this close to being a legit, like really pitching in the biggest moment of the season for the Braves.
Well, I'd almost want to save Ynoa for higher leverage situations, almost kind of the way
in the middle of the game
the Indians used Andrew Miller in that 2016 postseason, and the way that, you know, Aroldis Chapman's been used in the past. Like, I feel like in the postseason lends itself, especially in recent years, to more outside the box managing. I'd want to have, and again, this sounds kind of like the way that Brian Snicker talks about Josh Tomlin, but I feel like it's for a different scenario. I feel like I'd rather have Oscar Ynoa able to be called on anytime I want him, as opposed to just starting a game.
Mm-hmm.
Did I redeem myself there, Caleb?
The thing I'm going to lay out for you is here's your issue. When you have Kyle Wright starting a game for you, you know you're going to have to come from behind. Like, that's it.
If you the other day.
I pulled it up. I got it right in front of me. His last, five games? You got six inning pitched, gave up three runs. Wow, eight hits. Game before that, pitched four innings, gave up five runs. Game before that, three innings, three runs. Six innings, four runs. And then he actually had, against the Mets, a good start. He pitched 3 1/3, and he didn't give up any runs. My problem is, if I have Kyle Wright out there, I know I'm going to have to play from behind, and that's just not a position I want to go into a game knowing I'm going to have to deal with in a playoff position. Oscar Ynoa, I mean, he had an awful start against Washington. Take that for what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Against Baltimore, pitch four innings, you know? Wasn't bad. And I feel like you have enough bullpen arms that can get you through those middle innings enough that if you were to throw out Oscar Ynoa, he could at least keep you in the ball game and you don't feel like you have to rally, even though that has worked out time and time again for the Braves this season.
My opinion is totally born on not looking at any number. I don't even know, you know,
just looking
ERA.
At stuff.
I don't know any of his number. I'm just, it's literally just that is.
I'm not saying he doesn't have good stuff.
I've just got it in my. I'm not saying that you said that, Will. In my mind, when I think of Ynoa is throwing the easier, harder gas than any other Brave starter. He's got a slider that is completely falling off the table. D'Arnaud has said that it's crazy the way that it breaks. I mean, in what better perspective to get on that than from a catcher who says like breaks 2 feet at the last second. And maybe he only has those two pitches, but I really have confidence in him with two really solid pitches than I do with Kyle Wright, who is starting to improve. I will give Wright that. I think that, you know, he had big trouble earlier in the season locating his fastball, and nothing was really working because of that. He kept falling behind hitters and wasn't able to throw strikes when he needed to, and he was walking all these guys because of it. Now he's at least able to locate his fastball a little bit better. He's getting a little bit more run on it as well, but now it's the slider, which should be his best pitch, is not really, you know, guys are hitting those for homers. It's just kind of a cement mixer right now, but if that can improve, then things are looking up for Kyle Wright. I just feel like I have I have confidence in Ynoa that he's actually got two really good plus pitches working for him, and that's really like as much as I can ask for from a Braves fourth or fifth starter right now.
I'm all about length. I need more length from Ynoa. That's all I'm saying.
It's one of those. I wouldn't necessarily say it's his fault that they haven't thrown him
along.
They
haven't asked him to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's fine. I don't think they would necessarily need him to go super deep in a playoff game. I actually think that, and this is something I've been saying for a while now because it's been needed, but like Brian Snicker's challenge with this team is how does he actually leverage the bullpen so that he's getting the maximum effect out of these guys, because they are his best pitchers. Like outside of, you know, Max Fried and maybe Ian Anderson, the best pitchers on this Braves team are in that bullpen, and ideally you want them to be utilized to the maximum extent so that you're getting those productive innings out of those guys. And so I think that that is a challenge for Snicker in terms of how do you use those guys. Obviously, if you have a starter who can throw six scoreless or whatever it is, you know, you want a starter to ride it out as long as he can. But, you know, I think that the Braves will hopefully have the flexibility in the playoffs to go to the bullpen earlier in games if Brian Snicker feels like things are maybe getting out of hand.
So in 20, I have numbers here.
Oh, okay.
Because I saw this article and you guys made me think about this the other day. In 2010, 32% of the innings pitched in postseasons were pitched by relievers. 2 years ago, that number was 39.4%. Last year, jumped to 49. So 50% of innings in the postseason were pitched by relievers. It puts such a premium on your bullpen, I would think. I want to try and minimize that as much as possible because managers have quicker hooks in the postseason, and we saw it with Snitker last year.
I wonder if something that plays into that is the fact that these teams have been going to shorter rotations in the playoffs. I don't know if the stats back this up, but I do wonder if teams are, you know, there's more of a tendency for teams to go with, in recent years, three-man rotations in the playoffs. And because you're going with a three-man rotation, they're going on shorter rest, you need to pitch more, go to your bullpen earlier in games, typically. But that's not going to be the case this postseason because you can't use a three-man rotation. So it will be interesting to kind of see how things shake out.
That's what I was going to ask Joe is, I mean, you threw it out there. Is that your, in your mind, that fourth starter, is it between Kyle Wright and Oscar Ynoa? Or do you, I mean, I'm not thinking like you per se, but thinking more like Snit, what you foresee him doing. I'm assuming Tukey's got to be done after that start in Baltimore.
He ain't come back.
Snit has actually already kind of laid it out and publicly after one of the games a few nights ago that it's going to be Max Fried, Ian Anderson, Cole Hamels, and Kyle Wright. Those were the four names that he mentioned as being the starting rotation right now. And then he said that if they need a fifth guy, they can do a bullpen game or go to Ynoa, something like that. But in my opinion, I think that should be reconsidered and that there should be a conversation that happens before the playoffs start as to do they go to Ynoa or do they go to Kyle Wright if or when they need to.
Also, how comfortable are you with Max Fried starting on short rest, giving some of the little injury pop-ups that he's had?
I'm not super comfortable with it. If you look at his splits, if you go into Baseball Reference and look at when he's pitched on short days rest, they are nowhere close to when he's pitched on full rest or even more than full rest.
I think that's something that's not getting enough attention.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've had a lot of fun. I think we zigzagged a little bit during the Batter Up podcast. We will at least have one more podcast before we get to the postseason. Of course,
We're 10 games away from the postseason. It's so exciting.
The first game of the National League Wild Card Series will take place on Wednesday, September the 30th. So basically 2 weeks from yesterday. So as a result, we will have one more chance to talk to you before we get to the postseason, and then we'll have a preview podcast to get ready for whoever the Braves will play, whether it's the Reds or the Cardinals or anybody else that falls into that number six seed where it looks like the Braves are going to be as long as they hold on to the NL East crown. For Joe Patrick, Caleb Johnson, I'm Will Polashek. Thank you so much for joining us on Batter Up, a 92.9 The Game.